This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:17 a.m. on Thursday, the 15th of September. You are listening to The Morning Run with Shazana and Xiaoning. It is the eve of Malaysia Day, so of course we do have a number of stories focusing on relations between all the constituents of Malaysia today. In about half an hour, we are going to be discussing the reasons behind the socio-economic development imbalance between East Malaysia and West Malaysia, and what kind of policies are needed to address this. And since it's Malaysia Day tomorrow, we're looking at developments regarding MA63. There's been renewed attention on the Malaysia Agreement of 1963 over the past few years, and rightly so, which has resulted in intensified government efforts to ensure that Sabah and Sarawak have political and economic equity in the Malaysian Federation.
So recently, the Special Council on MA63 endorsed the proposal to increase East Malaysia representation in Parliament to 35%. Giving Sabah and Sarawak 78 of the 222 parliamentary seats. Now, some lawmakers believe that this move is a long time coming, as it's seen as one of the promises under MA63. Lawmakers also believe that this would ensure the balance of power and prevent Peninsular Malaysia parties from bulldozing constitutional amendments.
But is the pledge to allocate one-third of parliamentary seats to East Malaysia actually contained in the MA63 agreement? And would increasing parliamentary representation in this manner effectively give Sabah and Sarawak the political control that they deserve as partners in the Federation? For more clarity on this issue, we're speaking to Danish Prakash Chako, Director at Tindak Malaysia. Danish, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us. Now, I'd like to start with the historic background of this proposal. Some experts say that after Singapore left Malaysia in 1965, the 15 parliamentary seats under Singapore were supposed to go to Sabah and Sarawak. What do the official documents tell us?
Okay, so I need to give a bit of context on this matter. So when Singapore exited Malaysia, the 15 seats that Singapore had it through the MA63 vanished altogether and not transferred to any region. So this is something we have to make it very clear. So when the parliament voted to increase the parliamentary size in 1973, the 10 new seats were added to Peninsula Malaysia and no new seats were added for Sabah and Sarawak. Hence, this is a proof there was no reallocation of the 15 seats of Singapore to any party. So what does MA63 talk about? MA63 has been codified specifically for this topic, for Article 46, said that Sabah gets 16 MPs, 24 for Sarawak. There was no such thing saying that Sabah, Sarawak, Singapore shall constitute one-third or something like that. Mm-hmm. Because how it is being interpreted is, oh, so back in 1963, that 104 seats that you see in Malayan side, the Peninsula of Malaysia, is implied to be nearly two-thirds. The other side is around one-third. But there's nothing codified as it is. And interestingly, back in March 2022, our Minister for Law and Parliament, Wan Junaidi, even said there is no one-third representation in MA63. The Intergovernmental Committee Report of 1962, Cobbold Commission, and the Federal Constitution. And the thing is, I mentioned about the Intergovernmental Committee, which laid out a lot of principles for MA63, said that the share of seats of Sabah and Sarawak shall be maintained until 1970. Thereafter, it's subject to what the Dewan Rakyat has to amend the constitution.
Okay. But help us understand now the type of representation of MPs or the number of representations of MPs from Sabah and Sarawak. How much has it changed from the formation of Malaysia to currently? What difference has there been?
Okay, so I'll tell in terms of proportion over the key years. Mm. So I hope everyone pay close attention to it. So for us, we should not tie Sabah, Sarawak and Singapore together because the Intergovernmental Committee report never did come with that notion at all. So in 1963, when Malaysia was formed, with 159 MPs, Sabah, Sarawak combined together is around 25%. When Singapore exited in 1965, the share of Sabah Sarawak went up to 27%, even though there was no change in seat count for them. So in 1970, when the so-called grace period of the share that for Sabah Sarawak should not be reduced, it's still 27%. When in 1973, when the Peninsula of Malaysia added 10 seats, Sabah Sarawak's share dropped to 26%. As of today, it is around 25%. It's more or less the same as in back of 1963. Throughout history, if I'm not mistaken, there's only one occasion that the share actually dropped below 25%. That was in the mid-90s. But I would say the share has been more or less either equal to 1963 or higher. So we have to understand, even from IGC's point of view, if it was valid more than 1970, the Dewan Rakyat pretty much maintained that principle that Sabah Sarawak's share has not been reduced, exception of mid-90s.
Danish, what are the implications if Sabah and Sarawak MPs represent one-third of parliamentary seats? I mean, I guess, why not? Why not let them have the third if that's what they're asking for?
If there's two issues that comes with that. One is it actually creates the disparity of the voting power across Malaysia. It implies that some areas in our country, specifically some territories, have more voting significance compared to others. So that goes against the principle of equality, everyone equal under the law. Okay, so that's one issue. The other issue is for Sabah and Sarawak. Historically, right from the beginning until now, there is still a huge unaddressed voting power disparity between the urban constituencies and the smaller rural constituencies. And the chasm is quite big over there, the difference. So having one-third and without any necessary reforms from the Election Commission side means that we are going to worsen. We are not only pitting Peninsula Malaysia against Sabah and Sarawakians, we are probably going to worsen the chasm within Sabah and Sarawakian voters.
Okay, but in the meantime, we do have Sabah and Sarawak lawmakers saying that they want check and balances against the dominance of Peninsula Malaysia. So what are their options currently?
With the limited knowledge I have right now, I can say it's actually the Senate. That's one. But the other fact is, even with the 25% representation, unfortunately speaking, they have not fully utilized their full strength until recently. So you can see that in 1976, even the Sabah Sarawak MPs voted for the downgrade of their own territories into mere states of Malaysia. Only recently, this was restored to the MA63 principle that the Sabah and Sarawak are equals to Peninsula Malaysia.
Danish, what happens now? So we understand that the Special Council on the Malaysia Agreement has actually endorsed the proposal to increase Sabah and Sarawak representation. What's next? What are you watching for next?
Of course, here's a challenge, right? So if they have agreed to the 35% representation, is it something that eventually the Prime Minister of today or in future will table that in our Dewan Rakyat? Mm-hmm. See, the thing with this 35% is how they were argued is without the change of the total count in Dewan Rakyat of 222. So that means you increase the Sabah Sarawak share from, if I'm not mistaken, right now it's around 56, and they want to jump it up to 78. Mm-hmm. That means we have to deduct 22 seats or so from Peninsula Malaysia. And to give some context in history, there was two attempts in our Malayan history, the Malayan side, to actually redistribute the seats within Peninsula Malaysia, one in 1960 and 1973. Basically, it means some states will get more seats and some states had to lose their seats. Mm. The EC carried out such redelineation exercises for that purposes. And before it could be used for elections, the outcome of such redelineation reports was promptly annulled. So the idea that you want to get 78 within the context of 222, not possible. So the other option means, okay, shall we increase the day one rakyat size? I mean, that opens up more questions. What are you trying to achieve by that? Are you trying to use it to reform the legislature, reform the electoral system? Or even if you don't go along that line, how much support do we have for an increase in the total Dewan Rakyat seat count with the 35%? So I believe this whole idea of 35% doesn't help anyone at this point. It just opens up more problems than before.
And Danish, one thing for this to happen, just assuming it does go to Parliament, it would require bipartisan approach, support from all parties for it to happen. Am I correct? Is there political will for this, though, from the peninsula political parties? Do they want this to happen?
Okay. From Sabah, Sarawak, there is a strong case they're pushing for it.
Yes.
From peninsula Malaysia side, it goes back to what I discussed in the previous matter. Does it amount to reduction of total seats in peninsular Malaysia? If that happens, I'll be upfront. I'll be upfront that there will be opposition, because peninsular Malaysia political parties are, like also Sabah and Sarawak, they will hog their seats. So letting it go is very difficult. Then the other option is to increase. Yes, of course, political parties will get more options to be represented, but does it mean that how they're going to be represented is something that the political parties will agree to? So it can create some deadlocks.
Thanks, Danish, for speaking to us. That was Danish Prakash Chako, director at Tindak Malaysia, helping us better understand this proposal to expand the parliamentary seat allocation in Sabah and Sarawak, and giving us his take on whether this would actually be effective in increasing political representation for East Malaysia.
Yeah, but it doesn't look like it's going to be something that will happen very easily, right? There will be some resistance, especially from the lawmakers in Peninsular Malaysia. Nobody, and I repeat, nobody wants to give up seats, because if there are fewer seats here, that means there'll be fewer MPs from the political parties on this side. And for the motion to actually happen, it needs bipartisan approach in Parliament. So I don't know when it will actually... will this just be deadlocked for the moment?
It's true. I mean, I better understand now just the difficulties it would take to actually implement such a decision. So even though the special counsel has made this decision, I guess I too question what the timeline is for this actually coming to fruition, if at all.
The other thing Danish did highlight is this thing, is that if it were to happen, it would actually create voting disparity, right? And it's the idea of equal under, like, basically every person has one vote and their vote should have equal share. So when you do this, does it then mean that that some states will be more powerful than others? And it gives the indication that it will be.
Lots of things to think about on this point. It's 7:29 in the morning. We're heading into some messages and also the 7:30 a.m. news bulletin. When we come back, we're going to discuss criminal defamation laws in the country. That's happening after the 7:30 a.m. news bulletin. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.